Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Rod Oram this morning. Morena, Rod, how are you?
Atamari, Rachel, very well, thank you.
Well, that is good to hear. We're talking about what is going on in the business world this morning because there's been quite a bit of chat. Can you fill us in a little bit with kind of some of the main ideas, I guess, that have been discussed by Business New Zealand in the last couple of weeks?
Yes, Ed, before every election they do a survey of members to see what's on their minds and what they're wanting from the parties. And so we've had that process this year, but rather than a big meeting in Wellington with the politicians, there's been a series of webinars, and it's been extremely interesting. But let me just dwell first of all on the survey. So a very high proportion of business, I think the number is somewhere around about 70%, are very supportive of the government's actions so far on the pandemic. But then when they were asked, does the government have a plan for New Zealand's economic future, that number is very low compared with the number that National get in previous elections, say around about 60% saying, yes, the government has a clear plan. I think two problems arise with that. The first one is National did have a clear plan, but it clearly wasn't working because it depended entirely on a flood of short-term immigrants and workers in, say, low-paid jobs like in the dairy industry or lots of tourists, and productivity was going nowhere. Mm. There are some aspects of what the Labour-led government has done over the last 3 years which are more strategic, but it's it created a primary sector council, which has created a primary sector strategy, which is actually very forward-looking, and I've got a lot of hope for. But this is a government that hasn't been particularly articulate or sold that. Another really interesting thing is that if you go back to 2014, a relatively high percentage of people in business, or at least those polled, said yes to should there be a higher income tax rate. And that was 20% back in 2014. But it came back to 18% last election, and it's down to 9% this election. And my own interpretation on that is that I'm sure business people are sort of feeling the pinch a bit, as many of us are. But I think it's a little unrealistic for people in business, on one hand, to be getting a lot of support from taxpayers for their businesses, wage subsidies and the like, and not being prepared to share that burden if they still have enough income that could be taxed more highly. So I think there's a disconnect there. But I'd just say one thing that completely surprised me. There's a wonderful question: are you prepared to pay the living wage in the near future? And bear in mind, the living wage is quite a few dollars per hour above the legislated minimum wage, and 61% of companies said yes.
You know, is that a big rise from previous years, or?
I haven't spotted that question in the previous survey.
Right.
But I'm very surprised by how big that number is. But when I thought about it, it does actually make sense, because most people in business understand that if you want people with skills, with work experience, who are committed, you know, do turn up, you're going to have to pay them. And unfortunately, there are too many jobs in the economy where employers have neglected that role, and therefore they're looking for cheap, unskilled labour at the minimum wage. But I think that that's a really interesting number, that 61%, and gives me quite a lot of hope that there's a fair few employers out there who understand what the value of their people are when you invest in them properly.
I wanted to just go back and touch on the primary sector strategy a little bit there, because I've heard this sort of floated around in the past, but I don't really know much about it. Can you explain a little bit about what that actually is, and what it is meaning in the longer term sort of sense as well?
The Primary Sector Council was all entirely people from the primary sector, not from government. It was led by Lane Jager, who was a long-term and very good chief executive of Zespri, which is, of course, done very well. And when they came out with their draft report in December last year, it was good, and they were suggesting there was something around this idea of regenerative agriculture, i.e. that you farm in a way that you're helping ecosystems rebuild themselves, so those ecosystems become more resilient and more productive. So in other words, your asset it also improves. But by the time we got to the final report, which was out now a couple of months ago, there was a very strong emphasis on regenerative agriculture. And to our Māori worldview about those interrelationships. And this is getting quite a lot of sort of common currency in the primary sector,
right,
even amongst sort of Pākehā stakeholders who might not necessarily have been so interested. And I think that that's incredibly interesting because incredibly important because it is a big shift in understanding our relationship to Earth systems, to ecosystems. And then that gives us a lot of potential to, if we orient around that, to give us a lot of economic and ecosystem benefits, but also a strong image, a strong story to tell out amongst very crowded markets out there in the world.
Keeping on the kind of climate theme and thinking about the environment, I've been interested to see that the financial sector is going to have to report on climate change risk. This is something that James Shaw's announced. Can you tell us a little bit about this? Because this is being touted as a world first. What's actually going on here?
I want to deal with the world first one. That is looking at it in a bit of a narrow fashion.
Right.
It is broader based in some respects than would be elsewhere in the world. But for example, many major stock exchanges, such as the London Stock Exchange, for example, has for quite a few years now required large companies to declare their climate financial risks. And this is work that was started by, in particularly, Mark Carney when he was governor of the Bank of England, in conjunction with Bloomberg, the American business data person,
right.
Bloomberg News Service, etc., turned politician. So TCFD, Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosure, has a lot of momentum behind it. So we're a little late coming to this. Our stock exchange missed the opportunity when it rewrote its rules a few years back to get into step with those other major exchanges. But it's a really important step because shareholders, investors, stakeholders, the companies themselves need to know, need to understand what climate risk is to them. And when they know that, they can better allocate resources, better change and develop strategy. It's a very, very powerful discipline on businesses and one that's well worth the effort making. Now, it is complicated, and therefore you start with large companies, but over time, it's like so many financial disciplines, the systems get to be well established, the protocols well known, and it becomes more practical to do. So I'm very excited about over time, and I hope a relatively short period of time, we'll find more and more companies not only being required but wanting to do this because it's a very, very powerful discipline to make sure that they are locking on to climate issues and responding accordingly.
I think it's certainly really interesting, at least for somebody looking in from the outside like myself. It does seem like a useful check and balance kind of to get companies and larger sort of financial players to be understanding how their actions are going to be shaped by climate change, and therefore that sort of response to it is quite interesting to see, I guess, at a larger scale, maybe hopefully. So we'll see.
Yeah.
See what that means.
And if you take the sort of the extreme end of that, I would really encourage people to look up stories on BP, the British-based oil major, which has now for the second time, it said this 10 years ago that BP really stood for beyond petroleum, but that was largely greenwash. Now they're really serious.
That's interesting.
So they have substantially written down the value of their oil and gas assets. And investors supported that, supported a reduced dividend for the next little while, and supported BP's plans to invest a very significant sum, for example, in an offshore wind generation scheme in the North Sea, which is a very big investment for it, and completely outside fossil fuels. So that's kind of the climate-inducing, dirty end of town. But that's a really important principle for companies to be thinking of. And very sadly, I find the Business New Zealand survey really dull. in terms of identifying companies that think in these terms, so sustainability and climate takes a relatively low rating this. And yet, ironically, within Business New Zealand, there is a subgroup, the Business Sustainable Business Council, which has produced a very excellent pre-election report identifying what its members, who are also part of Business New Zealand, wanting. So if people want a more encouraging view of what business is thinking about, it's well worth looking at that Sustainable Business Council report.
Well, thank you so much, Rod, for walking us through this morning. It's really interesting to hear about what's going on in this kind of financial world that I know very little about. It's been a really helpful window. So thank you for that. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
I can only encourage everybody to get more interested in business. It's not life, but it's an interesting part of life.
It definitely is. Hey, thank you, Rod. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Have a lovely one.
You too. See ya.
See ya. Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary with